Jazz Dancer. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it's Thursday, February the 14th, and Treasury nominee Jack Lew gets grilled. Jack Lew, President Obama's nominee to head up the U.S. Treasury Department, faced a grilling yesterday by Republicans on the Senate Finance Committee about why he thought it was morally acceptable to take $940,000 bonus from the insolvent Citigroup in early 2009, when it received a $45 billion government bailout and was about to get an even bigger federal guarantee. Lew, who worked briefly at Citicorp for helping to downsize it, said he was compensated in a manner consistent with how other employees were paid. That's what he said. Here's Jeff Sessions, the senator from Alabama, the senior Republican on the committee, accusing Lew, who was director of the Office of Management and Budget, of writing a deceptive budget report in 2011 showing a decrease in the national debt if one of his proposals were implemented, when, in fact, it would have increased the nation's gross debt by $13 trillion, Sessions said. Here's the tape.
Mr. Lew, I want to stress again my displeasure with your statement that our budget will get us over the next several years to the point where we can look the American people in the eye and say we're not adding to the debt anymore. We're spending money we have each year, and then we can work on bringing down the national debt. I believe that's inaccurate. I believe any American that heard that would believe that this budget balances. It doesn't come close to do so. And this chart up here, I know it's on this primary balance theory that does not count the interest, but under your plan, the president's plan, at the end of your 10-year budget, the interest will be $844 billion in 1 year, dwarfing all these other agencies and departments and expenditures, something of which we've never seen before in our country, and it threatens our debt structure and our economy.
Senator, I don't disagree that we have to take on the debt and we have to pay down the debt and reduce the interest payments. And the only thing I take issue with...
Does this budget do it?
I think we get to the point where we
stop... Does it do it?
It gets us to the point where we stop adding to the problem with our new spending. And that's...
The debt goes up every year and the deficit debt is increased...
I just think that if we're going to have the kind of conversation we need to have to resolve this, we have to have it in a way where we respect each other. And I respect your position, Senator.
Well, I can't respect a position that suggests this budget reduces the debt. If you take that position, we're talking beyond each other. The Wall Street Journal said about this budget,
we stop adding to the debt with our new spending. We do have interest payments. We have to control those interest payments in the future. There's a down payment. We have to finish the job.
Well, forgive me, Mr. Chairman, but this is I don't think it's a matter of opinion. I believe, Mr. Lew, it's flatly in error, and it cannot continue. And I hope the president and he never repeats that this budget balances at any point in the 10 years.
Senator Sessions said Lew is unfit to be Treasury Secretary. But with Democrats controlling the Senate 53-45, Liu is widely expected to win confirmation later this month. And Republicans move to block Hagel's confirmation. The Senate Armed Services Committee, in a 14-11 partisan vote yesterday, approved the nomination of former Senator Chuck Hagel as Defense Secretary. And Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid of Nevada had said he expected a full Senate vote and confirmation of Hagel by the end of the week, but not so fast. Republican resistance has picked up some steam, and they're out for quarry today. They say they have enough votes to filibuster Hagel's confirmation and will do so. Rather than a simple majority of 51 votes, they'll push for an absolute majority of 60 votes, setting a precedent on cabinet confirmations. Hagel has not provided a financial information that he was supposed to, they said, and the Obama administration still has not given a full account on the terrorist attack on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi. Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, one of the leaders of the PAC, has said, no information, no confirmation. Here's Senator Roy Blunt of Missouri talking to Politico yesterday about the confirmation process.
Yesterday, after holding back, waiting for the hearing to give your opinion, you voted against former Senator Hagel for Defense Secretary. What do you think will happen now in the full Senate?
Well, I don't think we'll move forward for a few days on that, and there's been requests for more information. I think ultimately Senator Hagel will provide that information, and we'll see if it adds any new information to that final decision.
But, Senator Blunt, you think there could be a delay beyond this week. That means 10 days. So you're saying that you think that there's enough votes, 40 votes, to delay it?
My belief is there are 40 votes, not to set that as the permanent standard, but 40 votes that says it's too quick to end the debate on this nomination because reasonable things have been asked for that haven't been provided yet.
And so that's news, and you think that eventually will be provided. What still needs to be provided? As you were saying earlier, in your view, there hasn't really been a debate beyond the committee.
There hasn't been a debate beyond the committee, so, you know, when you really think about this from what this vote's about, it's not everything. Supposedly, every time you in the Senate talk about ending the debate, that's a filibuster. We haven't started the debate yet. So to have a vote to end the debate before we have the debate doesn't seem to me to give the credit and attention to the Secretary of Defense that the Secretary of Defense deserves. I think because of sequestration, because we're ending two wars that have challenged us in a lot of ways, that the next Secretary of Defense is going to have more to say about the military for the next 25 years than any Secretary of Defense. He's going to have a generational impact that no Secretary of Defense has had probably since Reagan was president.
And now, leaving the job that Hagel's been nominated to, Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta went on the offense yesterday. the offensive. In a briefing with reporters about a dysfunctional Congress, he says, that is putting national security at risk. Prior to his cabinet post, Leon Panetta was a congressman for 16 years, budget director and White House chief of staff in the Clinton administration, and CIA director for 2 years in President Obama's first term. He said Congress no longer resembles the Congress he knew when legislators respected the institution that they were part of. Here's Panetta in what possibly was his last news conference. You'll hear a bleep, and it stands for the B word.
Concerned that what should be and what our forefathers, I think, envisioned as a strong bond between an administration, an executive branch, and a legislative branch to help govern this country, that bond is not as strong as it should be. Oftentimes I feel like I don't have a full partnership with my former colleagues on the Hill. in trying to do what's right for this country. I don't pretend that we always make the right decisions. We make mistakes. But what I look for are members who are willing to work with us to try to work our way through some tough issues and be able to find solutions. We need to find solutions. We can't just sit here and we can't just sit here and complain. We can't just sit here and blame others. We can't just sit here and point fingers at each other. We can't just sit here and try to get sound bites. We can't just sit here and try to make points, political points. We have got to solve real problems facing this country. This country is facing some real threats in the world. I mean, this is not a time when we can kind of, you know, take a deep breath and assume that the rest of the world is going to be fine. We're facing some real threats, as I pointed out before. We can't do this alone. We have got to do this with the full partnership of the Congress and both houses of the Congress.
Well, you know, everybody agrees with that, but it doesn't seem to be happening. Not even in a country with great mediators and arbitrators. It just does not seem to be happening. Lots and lots and lots of Sturm und Drang in Congress these days. But today is Valentine's Day. And, you know, I think we need to have some kind of room for a little love. So I want to express my deep love and admiration for you. And I want to thank you for the love that you have shown me. And the way I do this, and I really want you to understand how precious this is to me, is to share with you the greatest love song of all time. It's just absolutely the best. It's one of my favorites. And with that, I say I love you this way. Valentine's Day. We'll take this break. Oh, by the way, that's my main man, Screamin' Jay Hawkins, for obvious reasons. We'll take this break, come back, and then we get down to some serious business, fact-checking the President's State of the Union Address, right after this.
in anytime for the latest in progressive news and ideas. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
All right, so I was back in high school, and we were in biology class. We were learning about dissecting frogs. And I think to myself, hey, I'm a journalist. Why can't I dissect the news? And so I started doing it. And I have the newsdissector.net blog, and I have News Dissector Radio here on the Progressive Radio Network. Every Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m., I'm Danny Schechter, your News Dissector. Join me here. PRN, the Progressive Radio Network, is moving forward, and we hope you are coming with us.
Hi there, this is Harvey Wasserman. I am the host of the Solartopia Green Power Wellness Show, which airs every Monday at 3 p.m. at PRN.FM. We cover the great issues of your health and wellness, of the health and wellness of the planet, of moving ahead towards a Solartopian, green-powered, holistic Earth. Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Hello, this is Dr. Jack Rasmus, your host for the Alternative Vision Show on the Progressive Radio Network. Alternative Visions interviews guests from grassroots America. The show's topics address the continuing economic and political crises in America. Alternative Visions differs from most radio shows. The focus is not only on understanding the crises, but discussing ideas on what can be done about it. Alternative Visions airs every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network at PRN.FM. And if you don't catch us live, you can still listen 24/7 on the PRN website. Once again, that's PRN.FM. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Hello, this is Richard Martin to remind you that I'll be looking out for you on Mondays and Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time to give you the latest from the financial world and to let you know just how bad things are getting. I'll be telling you things you'll never get to hear in the mainstream media. So join me here on the Wake Up Call. You can listen to the show at any time from the archives, and if you like the show, rate us on iTunes. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
This is PRN.FM, PRN, giving you a daily progressive take on the world.
This is Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we look now to the State of the Union address that President Obama so capably delivered. We heard what he had to say, and I did talk about the fact that most of the points that he had raised were not new. What was starkly missing, I said, was that we needed to hear more in terms of explanations about the likely impact of the measures that he highlighted in his speech, and we needed to know a bit more about how he intends to achieve the goals that he discussed. The speech was long on emotion and charged with campaign-style fervor, and it did elicit its requisite number of standing ovations and applause. But it was short on facts. Well, here are some facts. A group of scholars at the Cato Institute analyzed the president's address to the nation, and here is what they have to say. When we are through hearing it, we'll come back and we'll take your calls at 888-874-4888. Here is an analysis from the Cato Institute's point of view of the president's speech.
51 years ago, John F. Kennedy declared to this chamber that the Constitution makes us not rivals for power, but partners for progress.
President Obama clearly wants to continue the legacies of Presidents Kennedy and Johnson. He wants to expand the American welfare state, and he wants to save the world through government. But I also heard in this speech echoes of President Clinton, the emphasis on the middle class, the praise of hard work. But President Clinton didn't focus on taxing just millionaires and billionaires. President Obama knows we live in an era of limits. We are living toward the end of the American welfare state, and our president knows it.
Over the last few years, both parties have worked together to reduce the deficit by more than $2.5 trillion, mostly through spending cuts.
Let's be absolutely clear. There have been no spending cuts under this president. In 2010, the first year that this president was responsible for the budget, the federal government spent $3.4 trillion. Last year, the federal government spent $3.5 trillion. And for the first 4 months of this year, we're spending at a faster pace than we did in the first 4 months of last year.
These sudden, harsh, arbitrary cuts would jeopardize our military readiness. They devastate priorities like education.
First of all, the federal government only provides 10% of total education funding. You're talking about a 5% cut to that. That becomes a 0.5% cut to education spending. Then you put that in total context, huge increases in spending at all levels of government on education and flatline achievement. You realize that this isn't a devastating cut. It's way too small a cut.
The biggest driver of our long-term debt is the rising cost of health care for an aging population.
What's driving our long-term debt is government spending on health care. Politicians don't know how to run a health insurance plan like Medicare, so all they do is throw more and more of our money at the problem.
Already, the Affordable Care Act is helping to slow the growth of health care costs.
It is true that health care costs have risen more slowly over the last couple of years, but most health care economists say that's because of the recession. If people have less money, they spend less money on health care, and that brings down the cost. But the government's own actuaries suggest that in the future, health care costs are going to rise more quickly, and in fact, more quickly as a result of the Affordable Care Act than they would have if the law had never passed in the first place.
We'll reduce taxpayer subsidies to prescription drug companies and ask more from the wealthiest seniors.
No one has done more to increase taxpayer subsidies to drug companies than Barack Obama has. But to his credit, if he wants to reduce Medicare subsidies to the wealthiest seniors, more power to him.
And I am open to additional reforms from both parties, so long as they don't violate the guarantee of a secure retirement.
He wants to provide seniors with a secure retirement and yet generate massive additional savings from our entitlement systems. You cannot pay doctors less and not expect to hurt service quality. You cannot pay drug companies less and not expect to get less drugs. I think all of his other spending plans are therefore just not credible.
Today, our scientists are mapping the human brain to unlock the answers to Alzheimer's. They're developing drugs to regenerate damaged organs, devising new materials to make batteries 10 times more powerful.
Well, this is really a reference to electric cars, which have never sold in the volume that President Obama said that they would. The American people have consistently rejected the electric car, and now even the New York Times and the Washington Post are calling for the end of the electric car scam.
And tonight I'm announcing that we will launch talks on a comprehensive transatlantic trade and investment partnership with the European Union.
Trade talks between the United States and the European Union are a big deal and potentially very good news for free trade. The United States and the European Union are the two largest economies in the world by size, and the amount of trade between them constitutes almost one-third of world trade flows. But these trade talks tend to linger on. Trade talks within the Pacific region are now in their 16th round of negotiations, and there's no end in sight.
Right now, countries like Germany focus on graduating their high school students with the equivalent of a technical degree from one of our community colleges.
President Obama is right that other countries have a lot more educational options than we do, more robust vocational tracks, lots of different ways for kids to get educated. And that's what we need. The problem is that President Obama opposes the best way to get those sort of options, and that's school choice.
Through tax credits, grants, and better loans, we've made college more affordable for millions of students and families over the last few years.
We make it more affordable by giving you more money to pay. But the reality is that what that money does is just let colleges raise their prices with impunity. That's why you see greater inflation in college than any other sector of the economy, including healthcare.
The time has come to pass comprehensive immigration reform.
President Obama's vision for immigration reform did not include an essential component, the creation of a large and robust guest worker visa program for lower skilled workers. Such a program is absolutely essential in order to channel future immigrants into the legal market and provide the legal workforce that America needs to continue to grow.
Women should earn a living equal to their efforts. and finally pass the Paycheck Fairness Act this year.
For 50 years, it's been illegal to discriminate based on gender in hiring, promotion, and salary decisions. This isn't about that. This is a bonanza for trial lawyers and bureaucrats to insert the government at all levels of employment regulation such that the employer has to prove that any difference in salary isn't discrimination, regardless of qualifications, choices, or anything else.
Corporate profits have skyrocketed to all-time highs, but for more than a decade, wages and incomes have barely budged.
Part of the reason wages aren't rising faster is that Obamacare is eating into workers' wages by increasing the cost of health benefits.
Raise the federal minimum wage to $9 an hour.
If your productivity does not justify that wage, then you simply will not have a job. You cannot legislate wealth in this country. If you want to raise the wage to $9 an hour, why not $19 or $39 or $100 an hour? That does not produce wealth. That produces unemployment.
And we'll work to strengthen families by removing the financial deterrence to marriage for low-income couples.
Obamacare contains a marriage penalty, where couples are better off financially if they don't get married. So a great way to eliminate marriage penalties would be to repeal Obamacare.
Police chiefs are asking our help to get weapons of war and massive ammunition magazines off our streets.
The president is arguing against straw men. Machine guns have been illegal since the 30s. Weapons of war are not legal.
Most gun violence is committed with handguns, and much of that is connected with the war on drugs. If the president is serious about curtailing gun violence in this country, he should end a failed war on drugs and not commence an attack on popular firearms that are used for sport, hunting, and lawful self-defense, such as the AR-15.
None of the gun control measures that he's proposing, even the constitutional ones, have been shown to reduce gun violence in any way. Chicago and D.C. have some of the highest rates of gun violence, and they also have the most strict gun control measures.
I signed a new executive order that will strengthen our cyber defenses by increasing information sharing and developing standards to protect our national security, our jobs, and our privacy.
Think of the president's executive order as top-down, Soviet-style cybersecurity. It seeks to use the power of the executive branch to force the corporate sector to do the government's bidding without any authority under law.
Today, the organization that attacked us on 9/11 is a shadow of its former self.
So the president is right that Al-Qaeda is a shadow of its former self, replaced largely by groups that have proven again and again their inability to effectively strike at the American homeland. So it's ironic that what the president didn't mention is that the NSA continues to sweep in an unimaginable quantity of internet and telephone communications using the extraordinary powers granted them by the FISA Amendments Act of 2008. The FBI continues to build a network of informants far beyond the dreams of J. Edgar Hoover, even as the domestic threat now largely consists of unemployed losers that the FBI has to provide with funding, bombs, and even plans.
Tonight, I can announce that over the next year, another 34,000 American troops will come home from Afghanistan. This drawdown will continue, and by the end of next year, our war in Afghanistan will be over.
It's welcome news that President Obama said he's going to cut U.S. troop numbers at least in half by next year. What he didn't articulate is exactly how many U.S. troops will remain after 2014 and what their designated role will be.
America's commitment to a unified and sovereign Afghanistan will endure.
President Obama really shifted the goalposts on Afghanistan. The original objective of the surge was to reverse the Taliban's momentum. When that failed, which it did, what he ended up doing is retroactively reshaping what the goal was supposed to be, which is expanding the number of Afghan security forces. And certainly they've increased in terms of quantity, but not in terms of quality. We've seen increased number of defections. We've seen a rise in the number of insider attacks against U.S. and coalition forces. And also we've seen them also making de facto arrangements with the Taliban, with the enemy that we've been fighting over the past 12 years. Unfortunately, we cannot resolve Afghanistan's internal conflicts and internal politics, and really we can't resolve also the proxy battleground that Afghanistan has become.
We don't need to send tens of thousands of our sons and daughters abroad or occupy other nations. Instead, we'll need to help countries like Yemen, Libya, and Somalia provide for their own security.
If we're going into Yemen and Libya and Somalia and Mali, why not Pakistan? Why not Haiti? Why not Botswana? Why not dozens of other countries around the world? What he did not articulate is a limiting principle in terms of where we should and should not intervene.
And not a single word about neighboring Mexico and the over 60,000 people who have died there in the last 6 years in a U.S.-sponsored war on drugs.
So in the months ahead, I will continue to engage Congress to ensure not only that our targeting, detention, and prosecution of terrorists remains consistent with our laws and system of checks and balances, but that our efforts are even more transparent to the American people and to the world.
President Obama has embraced and expanded the legal justifications and the conceptual framework of President Bush's war on terror policies. Not only has he increased the number of drone strikes in Pakistan, Yemen, and Somalia, he's also claimed the authority to detain American citizens indefinitely and to draw up secret lists to kill Americans without charges.
It takes extraordinary chutzpah to speak the language of transparency when it comes to drone strikes, when only after the leaking of an extraordinary Justice Department white paper did the president finally condescend to provide even Congress with the basic legal justification for a program he uses to unaccountably and unreviewably determine which American citizens abroad are to be killed without trial.
Transparency is not the biggest problem. The biggest problem is political leaders with unchecked power.
Thank you. God bless you. And God bless these United States of America.
Well, there you are, a review of the major points of the president's State of the Union address. And it certainly does open your eyes to the flip side of the coin. And that's what I meant. Instinctively, when you listen to these speeches, you first of all, you know what the point of the speech is, which is to persuade you. It is a one-man show, so he commands the presence and attention of everyone, and there's no rebuttal there in the moment. And so a lot of things are said, and of course nobody in the audience, nobody looking on to at this presentation is in a position to immediately check the facts. But those are some very interesting facts to consider. As you go through the presentation in your mind and you see the yawning gap between what the president has said and what a different reality is. I mean, it's amazing. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. I was, in fact, surprised that the first thing that they noted was that this administration is following very closely that of the Clinton administration. And they said that, and I've been saying that myself. If you look at the patterns, and that's why he says, the commentator says that President Obama knows full well that this is, in fact, the coup de grace to deliver to welfare as we know it. Bill Clinton started that program to end, he made it clear, he was going to end welfare as we know it. And he started to whack away when he was there, and now it's the president's turn to just close everything up, tie it in a nice neat bundle, and it's over. Make no mistake, all these tax reforms and all this talk about the middle class, I see even the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times are beginning to question the thing I've been asking. Who exactly is this middle class he's talking about? And so you have in front of your face, you know, a kind of sleight of hand happening. The people who know what the intention is, and your guard is down because, after all, I mean, he's a very friendly guy, and he's, quote, liberal, unquote, and so you don't suspect that President Barack Hussein Obama, a brother, is going to, you know, go down that road. Surely that can't be the case. So your guard is down. And for other reasons, the calculation is that we will shut up and not voice our opinions. We will just shake our heads in private because so many black people, especially because that's the constituency that he leaned on heavily to get elected in the first place, there is a kind of bond. Nobody wants to be the one to, you know, publicly upbraid him. Nobody wants to be the one to publicly disagree with him. And so people are, you know, they retreat. But no, literally, this administration is the administration that the fight has to be fought. It has to be fought because under the guise of liberalism, under the guise of progressivism, a lot of lethal blows are being dealt to people who are poor, working poor, whatever it is you want to call them. The fact is the bulk of us will be suffering no matter what it is that, you know, we are told. He just simply said, he just brushed it off, if I remember the speech correctly, the actual phrase, when referring to tax reform and social programs, the form of social programs, he says, it's going to be hard. No kidding, really. Hello, you're on the air from El Paso.
Yes, hello, Eutrice.
Yes.
Yes.
You're on the air.
John. This is John from Staten Island. You know, I was listening to the State of the Union speech and also your analysis. And, you know, I right away, when you had this gentleman over there in L.A., Mr. Dorner, Christopher, who was mm-hmm. killed the other day in the cabin, you know, right away to me, we have to revisit Ruby Ridge. And I know at one point you might just revisit Ruby Ridge. I'm not saying that is a great comparative analysis of Ruby Ridge and Bear Mountain in California, but the bottom line is that they should tell poor people in this country, let's get out of the country by high noon because they don't respect us. All they see us as is a tax base, taxation without proper representation, and the continuous onslaught of the poor working pro-lumpertarian classes and races of this country, the Native American, the poor whites, and the working class people. We are totally being obliterated. So when you have somebody like Ruby Ridge family and you have somebody like Christopher Dorner, you know, people are rebelling against violations, taxation without proper representation of their daily human and civil rights because the government does not represent the taxation that they're taking from us to dispense democracy.
Well, I appreciate your view. I differ with it a bit because there are different circumstances. We are going to be talking about the Christopher Dorner case. We are absolutely going to be talking about it. I'm waiting to see when they will officially declare that, in fact, it was his body that they retrieved from the cabin. So we are going to be talking about that case. It's a pretty important case to discuss. Thanks so much for calling, Jay. Thank you. 888-874-4888. It is imperative to keep an open mind when you hear the facts. And people are now, I mean, I look at some of the programs and there's just, oh, the Republicans are this and the Republicans are that. I am not, part of the cheerleading squad for the Republicans. But people have to appreciate a certain point that they're trying to make. And the point that they're trying to make is, the president, and we heard it again, the administration has done end runs around Congress. And people don't like that. It isn't going over very well. It might have been a calculated move, but it is not going over very well. And so we are here with two appointments, possibly all three. We have a John Brennan's appointment and Chuck Hagel's appointment hanging in the balance because they're saying, we want answers. And people are saying, well, these guys don't have anything to do with it. And Republicans are saying, well, we don't know. We don't know that. So it's all of this brinksmanship, and the president addressed it in his State of the Union address. But the fact is this. The administration is at odds with Congress. It is, you know, very smooth. It's a very velvety kind of feel to it. It's not loud. But it is very insistent that it does not have to account to anybody. I said that myself. And a group of people operating like a government within a government, and they're also smug and also smart and also Harvard. In fact, even the Washington Post talked about the president apparently taking his economic cues from two Harvard economists, Claudia Golden and Lawrence Katz. I mean, people are spotting this stuff. They're seeing, they're connecting the dots. The president needs to regroup and needs to come to terms with the fact that there is a way to get things done. I understand the world of politics, you know, it's, as I said, it's a world of hypocrites, and some in Congress are some of the hippoest crits that you could find. But there is a process, and a fundamental resistance will arise when a president acts as a monarch and seems to think that it's about, you know, this contest is to prove who is smarter, who can get their way, and who is smarter at it. And I believe that this is at the root of the exodus of the cabinet. People have a fundamental dislike for this kind of thing. And the president is going to be the biggest loser in the end. The people, of course, are going to lose either way. But he has an opportunity to regroup and say, okay, this is what we need to do. Let's talk. Let's find a way to get things done. Otherwise, here's the problem. All this momentum, all this energy, all this money and time and effort poured into the presidency, this historic presidency, and it is being whittled away. It is being wasted. A fantastic and important and historical moment is being just frittered away because we have a truculent Congress, and we have a president who is surrounded by people who basically believe in the fine art of deception. That's really what it is. The Obama administration is beginning to take on a stench, the same kind of stench that the Clinton administration had. A bunch of folks who, you know, in their private moments, kind of smirk and laugh at what they got away with and how smart they are, how much smarter they are than the rest. That is going to be the downfall of this presidency. That is going to be the downfall of this administration. And in the end, again, the people will be suffering, and it will be the clash of egotistical titans. We are watching it unfold, and we're watching nothing being done. The business of the people not being done. And although the president points a finger at Congress and the Congress returns the favor by pointing a finger at the president, I believe truly that the president has to make a very important adjustment to the way he operates. It's not good. It really isn't good. For all kinds of reasons, like I said, we want to support him, and all of them, people feel, you know, this is he's a good guy, he's a young guy, he's got bright ideas, it's a generational fight, or whatever it is. But the fact is, the president is not behaving like a president when it comes to how things are done. You don't decide that you're going to just plunge the nation into war. You don't decide that you're going to kill off this person or that person and nobody knows anything except you and your buddies. This is not the way things are done. That's the very thing that he criticized. And yet he publicly talks about transparency and accountability. And we're not getting either of them from this president. It's a very sad thing. And I could tell that nobody close to him is able to say, listen, you know, let's take a weekend and kind of regroup. And despite all the applause, and you know, it's all heady, you know, you're the star of the moment and all of that, and you're the guy, you're the big guy on campus, everybody's for you and whatnot. That stuff could be very, very beguiling. But you need a sober-minded person who is able to take him aside and say, listen here, you're blowing a very important moment. There's a lot riding on you, and it's not about you. It really isn't. And get to work. We know what the other factors are. We know racism is in the mix. We know all of that. But this, it's with all of that said, he was the one who took on the job. He was the one who presented himself as ready to take on the job. He was the one who asked for support so that he could take on the job. Well, then do the job. Do the job. I want to thank you so much for joining me today. And, of course, go over the stick. Encourage people to examine things. You know, don't just take a person says something and you just take it for what it is. No, there's another side to it. You don't have to rush, because you will always be able to take the time to analyze what it is you think you need to know more about. But don't take anything for granted, including me. Don't even take what I say for granted. Listen very, very attentively. Watch things very, very closely, and you will see that there's a lot more that is being said. When you really look at it, there's all these different layers of meaning. And when it comes to politicians, you know you have to be on your guard, your best guard, because 99.9% of what it is they're saying ain't exactly true. So thank you so much for being with me today. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. And you want to stay tuned right here, because coming up next is Occupied Territory with Mike Fader. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Because of mine. Stop the things you do. Things you do.